Welcome, everybody, to another slightly delayed edition of Cambridge Inside Out. My name is Robert Winters, and today is December 17th, 2024. We kind of blew it off last time because I was in the midst of doing another exam. Actually, the students are taking a final exam tomorrow, starting at midnight, actually. So we're still in the thick of it. So anyway, a few things I want to do just to catch up on things, but one of the things I wanted to do right away was just to acknowledge the passing of a friend who I just learned of her death just a couple of days ago. Apparently, I thought she had just died a couple of weeks ago, but apparently it was actually a year ago. We just didn't quite know. So I'm just gonna just jump over here and tell a little story. Many of you may not know it, but Vicky Cassana was one of the most pivotal people when we were developing Cambridge's original drop-off recycling program back in 1989 through 1991. She even worked for the city as sort of the interim recycling coordinator before we had a regular recycling coordinator hired when we went to the curbside program. And she'd been ill for a while, but again, it was a pretty kind of a crushing story to hear that she had passed. And I just to sort of show a little few pictures of way back when. Back we were doing getting the recycling program started from about summer of 1989 until sometime in ni early 1991 was, I think, the last of the ones before we went to the curbside program. So, I found myself being a little bit nostalgic looking back and seeing these photos here with the inimitable Annette French and Vicky Cassana on the right working the newspaper tables back then. This was, I think, on our very, very first iteration of the drop-off program. Over on the right, you can see Vicky and Jane Lewis, who actually later married City Councilor Frank Duhay, and I believe he's worked as a clerk magistrate for the state. But you can see actually in the background the soon to be Danahy Park back when it just looked like a big moonscape. And it's just a few nice little photos, memories here really of Laurie Siegel, Fred Small in the background, Doug Dodds, and a few others with my old trusty old orange and brown two-tone VW bus, which was really the lunch wagon for the whole program in those days. Sumner Martinson and Vicky Cassana. Sumner was worked for the state DEP Division of Solid Waste Management, but he's also a Cambridge resident, and he was part of our core group of about a dozen people who really got things going. Just because I wanted to show a picture of Vicky and myself here, and I put another kind of portrait style picture of me carrying magazines back in those days. Here on the right, it's me and Vicky at the back of the recycling truck, basically my VW bus. Anyway, I just thought it would be kind of it was worth mentioning. You may notice there's a little button right in here. I'll tell you a little bit about that in a second here. That was a button. Vicky had a very, very amazing sense of humor. And she gave me because I actually started working at the Sherman Street site because we had a lot of older people. I don't think they could lift a lot, so I could lift a fair amount. John Reinhart, myself, and a few others really did a lot of heavy lifting in those days. But she gave me a button that I just plucked it out right now, and it just says, "I'm not real smart, but I can lift heavy things." So anyway, in memory of Vicky Cassana, I still have that button. I treasure it very, very, very much. So. Anyway, getting back to the here and now, we've since we didn't do the show a couple of weeks ago, I thought I'd just do a little bit of catch up of some of what's been going down at the at City Hall and some of those things. Without further ado, actually, I think I'm just going to do this sort of the easy way here. I'll sort of bounce back and forth with this here. So, we had a city council meeting last night, so December 16th. And I just wanted to, again, I'll get into some of these. You probably don't need to see this list here, but I'll I'll just sort of touch on some of the points directly here. So, one of the things that, I mean, I'll just list a few of the things that I thought were significant at last night's meeting. I didn't attend. I actually haven't attended several in a row, but that's another story about why I'm not particularly eager to be hanging out there these days. But there was one thing that's been afoot is they've been trying to accommodate some of the impacts of the bike lanes and bus lanes where there was a lot of loss of parking. And one of the ways in which they have been addressing that is there are some changes to the municipal ordinance, and I believe even some changes to the zoning ordinance, if I'm not mistaken, necessarily to allow something that would have been unheard of during the days of the parking freeze and the PTDM ordinance, parking and traffic, parking and transportation demand management, which was really what supplanted the old parking freeze, where they really wanted to discourage motor vehicle and people driving into the city. So for one of those, what they did is they wanted to make it so it's very difficult for people to rent out, privately rent out parking spaces on their private property, because they were trying to discourage people from driving in. Okay. But now, it's sort of a different era. And in some places, particularly out in North Cambridge, we'll see how applicable this is elsewhere, but along North Mass Ave, where there were some, commercial properties that had some parking on the premises that was not being used or is underutilized, or maybe the business only operates certain hours, and maybe that parking could be made available. So they had to actually make some modifications to allow for what they're calling flexible park. They did created the flexible parking zoning petition, and as well as a change in the municipal ordinances. To allow people to make that available. My fear is that it'll be available, but only at a cost. So for those of us who are accustomed to on-street parking or resident parking, that's not necessarily a very great benefit for us if somebody says, well, if you want to work up there, if you need a parking or something, you now you're going to have to pay a large sum of money per month. Right? But anyway, that's one of the things that's on the agenda now. It wasn't ready for ordination just yet, but it's been passed to a second reading and it's sort of in the queue. One of the things that, again, speaking about the ramifications of the cycling safety ordinances and the removal of parking elsewhere, last year and leading up to last year was a big flashpoint where there was a change in the traffic configuration to make Garden Street one way. Coming in toward Harvard Square. That was done presumably then to allow for separated two you know one way two separated bicycle lanes, right? But that has led by many accounts to a lot of traffic spilling over into other streets, especially in this day of these apps that you can get like Waze that will direct people toward alternative routes, and which has, quite frankly, turned a lot of quiet little streets into thoroughfares. So there's been a lot of pushback, and so it's been a proposal from Councillor Toner and others to restore Garden Street to two-way operation, which will have some loss of parking. I think the original one-way configuration was to preserve some of the parking. So now the trade-off seems to be switching the other way. So at last night's meeting, there were really left over from the previous week, which is when the item was on the agenda at the December 9th meeting. There were 372 communications, almost all of which were people mainly supporting the restoration back to two-way operation of Garden, which personally I would prefer. But other people say, no, we don't want to lose our parking, So the trade-offs are getting very, very difficult. And quite frankly, the cycling safety ordinance is viewed as largely untouchable because of the political consequences of it all, which I think is ridiculous, especially with some things that are heading down the road, next year, I believe, where my street, Broadway, is sort of in the queue, in the queue to get the same sort of treatment. There's no way they can make Broadway one way, So the city currently is planning to take away 75% of all the parking along Broadway, which is going to put an enormous amount of pressure on all the side streets. It's also going to put an enormous amount of pressure on some of the businesses in the little multi-use block that I live on, where it's we got schools, preschools, coffee shops, and things, and not to mention City Hall Annex, where people go there to pay parking tickets, and now going to probably get another parking ticket when they're trying it because they can't find parking, and they'll be parking illegally because of it. So, anyway, something's got to break somewhere. I hope that some of our elected officials can learn to revise some of these things. I just want to point out that Broadway was not originally on the cycling safety ordinance bicycle plan. So, all they really have to do is revert to the original plan and then problem solved, right? As far as I'm concerned. And, honestly, do you really need to have Cambridge Street, Broadway, and Mass Ave all parallel streets all turned into bikeways? Or do you want to maintain a street that's actually pretty useful still for emergency vehicle access? Broadway is also, despite the name of Broadway, is actually not the widest street in certain sections, particularly. So it's going to be a huge challenge to do things anyway. Another big item at last night's meeting of some significance, though it sort of went by without a pretty much almost without any comment at all, was our current city manager, Yan Huang, is. I think he was on a 3-year contract, and part of that contract said that there's a certain date. I think it's this January, where or at least end of this year, where the city council had to make it known whether they intended to renew the contract later in 2025. So they had an evaluation process. Everything came up smelling like a rose, and so they passed two ordinance. One is accepting the evaluation. And then the second order was basically commencing the process of negotiating a contract extension, which would hope presumably be signed later in the year. So anyway, as some people do correctly point out, probably the single biggest thing the city council does is select a city manager to run the city. So even though it went by without a barely a comment, it really arguably is the biggest action the city council can take. So, one other thing that's sort of you might think of it as a minor thing, but I think it was sort of a revision of which is overdue. Anybody who's been around Cambridge long enough knows that you can barely go through a intersection, a street corner, without there being a sign commemorating somebody. Or a bench that has, dedicated to the memory of so and so, and what have you, and many. I think there was some program. There was at least some initiative to catalog these all and have it so that somebody maybe with their little phone app or something could go and find out more about the people who are commemorated these things. But I think the real problem is they're capped at about 30 of these dedications per year now because it was just so many. And now there's a special committee that has to kind of pick and choose who's going to get the honor and who isn't, right? Which is kind of an awkward thing. So I think with this, so there's a city council order at last night's meeting, which I think made sense to basically take a revised look at the whole process and see if there's other ways of commemorating people, significant people. And significant families, throughout the history of Cambridge. Would they maybe put a cap on maybe not? They're going to do a temporary moratorium on street corner dedications. I think there's some, plant a tree, put some bricks. You've seen somewhere you see buildings or sidewalks that have bricks with the names of people who we've lost. So I think it's time to take a second look at that. So that was one of the city council orders. A couple of resolutions, one that was on the regular agenda and one that came in as a late resolution. First one was just a resolution honoring John Tirgiuri. Now, John was an artist, a local artist. I think he used to live on Ellery, but I remember John when we were putting out the public area recycling bins, and he produced all these decals that we put that made it look like bottles and cans around those. So that was artwork from John. So I remember him from that. I'm sure I've been over his house a couple of times, but a long, long time ago, because I believe he'd moved up to Salem some years ago. But he's done a number of art installations around the city. So anyway, he passed away a month or so ago, and so there was a resolution from Kathy Zusi commemorating John, which I thought was really welcome. The other resolution of some interest, which really kind of got very weird last night, was so there's a place in Harvard Square, maybe everybody knows, called Whitney's Bar. A fellow named Dan McGuire is a proprietor, but it's in a building now owned by, like half the buildings in Harvard Square owned by Gerald Chan. So I believe there had been some rent forgiveness and some eventually coming up with some sort of court settlement where the bar is supposed to shut down, but it's like shutting down Cheers, right? It's there are a lot of patrons who aren't happy about this. So apparently it's getting a little bit ugly. Some people, using threatening language about this, but there was a late resolution from Mayor Simmons and two other councilors signed on, basically saying, can we maybe find some sort of a resolution to this? Maybe the bar could stay open, but it's not so clear that it can. But again, it's just a sort of a goodwill resolution asking Gerald Chan and the owners and operators of Whitney's bar to maybe try and work something out. It's just not, the city council has no power whatsoever to do anything, of course, but they do at least have some influence. And I mean, of course, because it had to do with Gerald Chan's properties, inevitably there was some discussion about how many properties he has, which are basically sitting vacant, like the Harvard Square Cinema or the old Dixon Brothers Hardware in Harvard Square. And that's not a good situation. So, I know we do have an economic development division and we do have a community development department who's supposed to sort of ride herd on a lot of these things, but I don't know whether they really are. And they certainly don't appear to be having a lot of success. And by the way, Gerald also owns a number of properties in Central Square, which are sitting vacant and they're really becoming problematic. So I don't know how you resolve this, I hope somehow we can kind of resolve the Chan question because I think he's a well-meaning individual. With enough wealth and potential to actually do great things for the city. So we just have to find a way to open up those lines of communications to make good things happen. So one other last thing I'll mention on that last night's meeting, which is really something that's been happening for the last bunch of meetings, is I just want to put a shout out to Diane LeBlanc, our city clerk, and not just Diane, but everybody who's working in the city clerk's office, because dating back to like about 2018, the city council seemed to have lost its discipline in doing things like getting basic committee reports issued and communicated to the full city council. In fact, they've taken very significant votes where there weren't even committee reports to report back as to what happened. And then they just made decisions based on something that the public never actually got to see, which is a problem. I believe Councillor Nolan last night attributed all of this dysfunction to COVID, which is ridiculous. Sure, there was some uptick in it, but this goes back to 2018, which is 2 years before COVID. So, anyway, shout out to the clerk's office for finally, I made a big point about this maybe end of last year about how many. I mean, it was 30 or 40 committee reports, and there had never been a single one delinquent in years prior. So she's been catching up, or the clerk's office has been catching up, and I give them a lot of credit for it. It's also a little weird reading reports, maybe of meetings I was even at, but dating back to 2018, 2019. I mean, Councillor Zondervan was particularly notorious in never issuing committee reports for his public safety committee, even though it was taking very, very controversial stances on things, yet never issuing reports. Anyway, thank you, thank you, thank you to the clerk's office for catching up. Now, one thing, a very, very important announcement came up just really days ago. And I think it's worth mentioning here. In fact, I'm going to jump over to it here right now. It was our assistant city manager in charge of community development is Iram Farouk, who's been in that position now for probably about a close to a decade, I believe. Right. She's succeeded Brian Murphy when Brian Murphy passed away. Actually, not immediately, but eventually succeeded it. So she also was a candidate for city manager a couple of years ago and didn't really get the votes to do that. So I guess some of us were kind of presuming at some point that, when you sort of try, you either go up or you go out, right? So she didn't go up. And so now she's taken a position as managing director of campus planning at Harvard University, which for some of us who've been around a long time was sort of an interesting echo of a similar thing that happened some years ago when Kathy Spiegelman was the head of community development department and pretty much did exactly the same thing, taking, I think it may even be the same position or pretty close to the same position with Harvard University. So, anyway, best wishes to Iram Farouk. I sort of got to know her during the K2C2 process. I don't know that she was necessarily the most popular head of community development department, but I think she should do very, very well in her future endeavors. So, be well. Another thing, a city council meeting of some great significance, though I was the only member of the public there, was a there's a special committee formed on the charter review. So presumably later in 2025 there will be put on the, as long as it survives the state process appropriately, we would the voters of Cambridge would vote on possible changes to the Cambridge City Charter. Now, there was a whole charter review process. I've certainly talked about it endlessly, which came out, and the net result last January were these recommendations. And then we've sort of kind of gone around in circles since then. But so now it's actually come down to a committee of the whole, meaning all nine city councillors, chaired by Paul Toner and Sumbul Siddiqui, to basically hash out which of the proposals from the Charter Review Committee they want to move forward on, which ones they want to dismiss entirely, and which ones they want to maybe kick the can down the road for a future discussion, because they're going to have a few more meetings, I believe, in January. So let me just pop over here and just say a couple of quick words about that. So, as I say, I was the only person who gave public testimony at it. It's interesting. This is a hugely consequential thing, yet it's completely off everybody's radar now. And by the way, the city council, one of the real flaws in the whole process and the reason why we should have had a charter commission rather than this committee that was appointed by basically the then Mayor Siddiqui appointed four city councilors who then appointed a 15-member committee. I think it was an extremely flawed process, personally. In the end, they came back with recommendations to the city council. But ultimately, the city council can basically say no way or do whatever, or they can just add whatever they want, So calling this as some, trying to suggest that this was some sort of really serious public process is a bit of a joke. But anyway, just so since nobody else seems to be reporting on this other than me, there was a 7-2 vote of the city of this, special committee of the whole, that to re maintain the city manager form of government. Only Sumbul Siddiqui, not surprisingly, and Jeeva and Sabrina Wheeler voted in favor of having a strong mayor. I think ultimately, pardon my drawing unfair conclusions, but I believe Siddiqui's intention in the way that whole committee was appointed was to try and favor being creating a strong mayor form so that she could be the strong mayor. But hey, that's just me. They also said without objection to maintain proportional representation style elections, which is kind of a tradition in Cambridge going back a long, long time. Maintaining an at-large city council of 9 members, the under the Planning Charter, you could have seven, so it's either 7 or 9. You could go higher, but there is kind of a sweet spot for proportional representation elections where somewhere around 7 or 9 is about the right number. And that's a discussion for another time. There were several, I would call, controversial proposals, like to allow non-citizen voting, 16 and 17-year-olds voting, moving the elections to even years. Those basically have been, it was acknowledged that if that was brought through the State House right now, the entire ship would have been sunk. So I think, little intelligence prevailed here. So they'll say, well, maybe one day down the road, there'll be a separate home rule petition for some of that. The one thing that's mattered to me more than anything was just allowing a little more flexibility in the election voting and tabulation methods so that we can have independence of ballot order, which is currently an embarrassment in the system we have now. It's a very tiny fix, but one that can be done as part of a charter review. So I figure you might as well take advantage of it. The last few ones I want to mention here, there were a few things like proposed from the Charter Review Committee about what they called creating resident assemblies. That was tanked big time, only one vote in favor. So apparently the city council doesn't want anybody else having a whole lot of input. They will do it all, thank you very much. There were some minor things. One of the things I found very interesting was I always feel it's important to have what you call a mechanism for redress of grievances. So there were proposals for what they call resident initiative, a resident initiative provision, so that a certain number of people signatures could actually force the council to take up a matter. The group petition, I'm maybe intertwining these two here, but basically a means for citizens to petition the city council or maybe even force ordinances into place or out of place. And they unanimously trashed them, which I find strange. And so I'm not going to quite say scandalous, but again, just another indication that, this city council isn't particularly interested in having citizen petitions or citizen initiatives, because don't worry, we can take care of everything, right? I don't know. It doesn't really set well with me. Right. I'm gonna do my quick artificial pause here, and then I'll be back for the second half in a second.